Good morning. I come before you today with a thankful heart, thankful that you all have made the effort to be here this morning, thankful that the Lord has given us this place that we can gather together, thankful that he has given us his word, that rod of iron that we can hold on to that will guide us no matter what the situation is that we're in. That when we go through that mist of darkness that we read about in Sunday school this morning, that the temptation that the world offers us, that we can hold on to something solid and stable that's always true, that's always right, that will lead us in the paths of righteousness. I'm thankful for your prayers, and I ask that we could continue in an attitude of prayer this morning, beseeching the Lord that he would guide our thoughts and our understanding, that together we might come to a greater understanding of God's will and his desires for us. Dennis, if you could bring that down just half a notch, that would probably be just wonderful. I'm going to start this morning in the first book of Nephi, chapter 5. Verse 181, and it's found on page 61 of the Book of Mormon, and this is an account of the family of Lehi leaving Jerusalem and leaving the European continent on a boat. And just a short scenario of one thing that happened on that boat that I would like to bring to our attention this morning. First Nephi 5, beginning at 181. We did put forth into the sea and were driven forth before the wind towards the promised land. And after we had been driven forth before the wind for the space of many days, behold, my brethren and the sons of Ishmael and also their wives began to make themselves merry, insomuch that they began to dance and to sing and to speak with much rudeness, yea, even that they did forget by what power they had been brought thither. And, of course, they had been brought across that water by the power of God, because they had no physical control over the boat themselves. Yea, they were lifted up unto exceeding rudeness, and I, Nephi, began to fear exceedingly, lest the Lord should be angry with us and smite us because of our iniquities, that we should be swallowed up in the depths of the sea. Wherefore I, Nephi, began to speak to them with much soberness. But behold, they were angry with me, saying, we will not that our younger brother shall be ruler over us. In these verses, we find the subject of my sermon this morning. And that subject is anger. And we see two instances of anger here. The anger of the Lord and the anger of man. So what is anger? Anger is a very basic, natural human emotion. There are a lot of them. It's kind of difficult to, and I did a little study on this as to what are considered human emotions, and it kind of depends on who you talk to, but some of them might be fear, love, surprise, lust, sadness, happiness, desire, jealousy, pride. These are human emotions, feelings that we have within us that we're sort of hardwired to have these things. We were created to have these feelings and these emotions. Now, you notice I said this is a natural human emotion. So we want to hold on to that concept. We all know what it feels like to get angry. Our heart rate goes up. Blood pressure goes up. We get flushed on the face. We get agitated. We don't always think straight. We react, sometimes violently. It can escalate into complete rage, total loss of control. The scientists tell us that there is an area of the brain called the amygdala. I'm just telling you what I've read, so I'm no expert on this. But the amygdala causes the brain to fill with something called cortisol. And when that happens, then there's a release of adrenaline, and that's what gives you that flushed feeling, and your heart rate goes up and your blood pressure goes up, and you just kind of go into a kind of an emergency response type of situation. And that's what the amygdala does. It is kind of our early warning system of emergency, and it's the same area of the brain where we generate fear from a sudden occurrence or a surprise. The other thing that happens during this process is that most of the rest of the brain shuts down. The areas of your brain for rational thinking, they shut down. And so I want you to just kind of think about that, about what anger does to us physiologically. There is a controversy about anger. There are kind of two sides of this anger discussion. One side tells us that anger can be constructive, that it can be useful if we take that energy and direct it for good. When that amygdala kicks in and we're warned that there is impending danger or that something's going on that requires action, that we take that energy and then we funnel it in a direction for good. The other side of the controversy is that anger is destructive. Or at best, it inhibits constructive thought. That when we're angry, if indeed that's that center of our brain that allows us to have rational thought, if that closes down, then it's not really possible to do something constructive, because you're operating in a danger zone. Your amygdala is saying, danger, danger, red lights are going off, and you go into a self-preservation mode. So these are the two sides of the story that I want to discuss today. And of course, we're in church, and I'm a preacher, and this is a sermon, so we're going to do it from a spiritual standpoint, because that's our guide. That's our rod of iron. That's what's going to lead us to the truth of the matter. So let's just look at a few scriptures that discuss anger or wrath. It's another word for it. And let's start with the first instance of man's anger that we see in the scriptures in chapter 4 of Genesis, beginning at verse 3. Genesis 4, verse 3. And in process of time, it came to pass that Cain brought of the fruit of the ground an offering unto the Lord. And Abel, he also brought of the firstlings of his flocks and of the fat thereof. And the Lord had respect unto Abel and to his offering. But unto Cain and his offering, he had not respect. And Cain was very wroth. That means he was angry. And his countenance fell. You know, that kind of sinking feeling. And the Lord said unto Cain, why art thou wroth, and why is thy countenance fallen? why are you unhappy? Why are you angry? If thou doest well, shalt thou not be accepted? And if thou doest not well, sin lieth at the door, and unto thee shall be his desire, and thou shalt rule over him. He said, why are you angry? All you have to do is change your point of view to what I want you to do, and you'll be happy. The solution is really very simple. You can conform to God's desire, and you'll be a happy person. Did Cain make that choice? And Cain talked with Abel, his brother, and it came to pass when they were in the field that Cain rose up against Abel, his brother, and slew him. He killed him. He murdered him because he was angry. Proverbs. You know this reading will be shorter. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 19. A man of great wrath shall suffer punishment. A man of great wrath shall suffer punishment. Proverbs 27. And I'm going to read a number of these because I don't want you to think that I've just pulled one verse out of the Bible and then hung my hat on it, or the Book of Mormon for that matter. Proverbs 27, verses 3 and 4. A stone is heavy and the sand weighty, but a fool's wrath is heavier than them both. Wrath is cruel, and anger outrageous. Wrath is cruel. Anger is outrageous. It's beyond the limits of acceptability. James chapter 1. I like James. It seems like no matter what the discussion is, you can usually find a couple of verses in James that are going to open your understanding. James chapter 1, verses 19 and 20. James 1, 19 and 20. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear. Listen, slow to speak. If we just took those two, we'd be a lot better off. Listen more, talk less. And keep ourselves out of a lot of trouble. Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, slow to wrath. For the wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. And what is the righteousness of God? Doing right things. Righteousness means right things. God's standard for right things. The wrath of man worketh not the righteousness of God. If we're angry, we can't be doing God's will. Book of Mormon, 2 Nephi, chapter 12, verse 23. On verse 100, or on page 154, 2 Nephi 12, 23 and 24. For the kingdom of the devil must shake, and they which belong to it must needs be stirred up unto repentance, or the devil will grasp them with his everlasting chains, and they be stirred up to anger and perish. For behold, at that day shall he rage in the hearts of the children of men, and stir them up to anger against that which is good. So whose tool is anger? Who is using anger in these verses? Satan. 3 Nephi chapter 5. We're going to be reading the words of Christ here. Verse 31 on page 634. Our brother Norman read this the other day and spoke about it. Page 634, verse 31. Behold, again, these are the words of Christ. Behold, this is not my doctrine, to stir up the hearts of men with anger one against another. But this is my doctrine. Listen to this. This is my doctrine, that such things should be done away. Gone. Chapter 5, verse 69 and 70. You have heard that it hath been said by them of old time, and it is also written before you, that thou shalt not kill, and whoever shall kill shall be in danger of the judgment of God. But I say unto you that whosoever is angry with his brother shall be in danger of his judgment. We've studied the Sermon on the Mount a number of times. And we've come to a realization of what Christ was trying to tell us in the sermon. And what he was telling us was, there are basic sins that you all know about. In this particular case, thou shalt not kill. And what he's saying is, I want you to take one step back from that action of murder. And I want you to consider the attitude of your heart that would cause you to murder. And he said that attitude of your heart is anger. People, as a general rule, don't murder if they're not angry. So step back from the action, consider the attitude, and then get that out of your heart. I did a scripture search with our wonderful little computer program, and I searched on the words anger, angry, wrath, and wroth. Okay? And I examined what was going on in all of those verses. And I found the two things that I found in this reading in 1 Nephi. I found God's wrath, and I found man's wrath. When it talked about God's wrath, it was talking about God's righteous judgment against the sinner. God's promise that he will punish the sinner. And that's God's wrath. That's God's righteous judgment. And it belongs to him. The other verses talked about man's wrath, man's anger. And over and over and over, the problems that were caused by man's anger. Remember, we discussed anger as being a natural response. Just as lust is a natural response. And we're told that we're not supposed to have lust in our lives because that's part of the natural man. And the natural man is an enemy to God. Thank you very much. Well, but Brother Dan, the Bible says that Jesus was angry. It says that Jesus was angry in the temple when he drove out the money changers. I asked my brother Alvin if he would be my volunteer, and I asked him if he would answer a multiple choice question for me. And it's very simple. This story shows up in all four Gospels. I don't want to be accused of picking one of them and at the expense of the other three. So I'm going to ask Brother Alvin if you would choose a gospel. I don't care which one, Matthew, Mark, Luke, or John. Matthew, okay. So we're going to turn to Matthew chapter 21, verse 12. And you can look at the other three, if you like. Matthew chapter 21, verse 12. And Jesus went into the temple of God. I want you to look at what's here, and I want you to look at what's not here. And Jesus went into the temple of God and cast out all them that sold and bought in the temple, and overthrew the tables of the money changers and the seats of them that sold doves, and said unto them, It is written, My house shall be called the house of prayer, but ye have made it a den of thieves. So we see what he did. He went in and he told the people that were making profit off of the sacrifices, you have to leave. Does it say any place in these verses that he was angry? No. But you can. I tried it. I got on the internet and did a search on Christian commentary of this verse. And over and over and over it said Christ was angry at the money changers. Now, as close as you can get to it is in John, where it says he made a little whip. He not only drove out the money changers, he drove out the sheep and the oxen. But it doesn't say that he was angry. Here's the one that gets the closest. In Mark chapter 3, verse 5. And this is the only gospel that this shows up in, to the best of my knowledge. Mark chapter 3, verse 5. I'll start at the first verse of chapter 3 of Mark. And he entered again into the synagogue, and there was a man there which had a withered hand. And they watched him, whether he would heal him on the Sabbath day, that they might accuse him. They, meaning the Sadducees, the Pharisees, the scribes, the priests of the temple. And he said unto the man which had the withered hand, Stand forth. And he said unto them, meaning the Jewish leaders, Is it lawful to do good on the Sabbath days, or to do evil, to save life, or to kill? But they held their peace. And of course, their point being that one of the strictest Old Testament laws was against doing any form of work on the Sabbath. And so they wanted to see if he would do something on the Sabbath. And so he simply asked them, is it against the law to do good on the Sabbath? And when he had looked round about on them with anger, being grieved for the hardness of their hearts, he saith unto the man, Stretch forth thine hand. And he stretched it out, and his hand was restored whole as the other. It seems a bit of a paradox. So I looked to see what the Greek word was that was translated as anger. And there are several Greek words that translate as anger. This particular word, orge, means initially desire, passion, or abhorrence. And you have to get a long ways down the list of definitions of this Greek word before it finally gets down to anger. So why the translators chose to say anger, quite honestly, is beyond me. Because think about the situation. He's come there because he loves the people, because he wants to bring them to a knowledge of his gospel. He loves this man who had the withered hand and had the desire to heal him and to show the Jews of that day that it's not against God's law to do good, to heal somebody on the Sabbath. And so as he's ready to do this, he's looking at them and he's displeased. I mean, he's saddened. What's the shortest verse in the Bible? Jesus wept. And why did he weep? Because he was looking out over the city of Jerusalem. And he was sad because of the sins of the people, of their unwillingness to accept his gospel. But he wasn't angry with them. He was sad. He had a desire for these people that they would change their attitudes. He had a desire, a great desire, that the people would change. Let's think about some of the things that make us angry. I think there are three major categories of things that anger us. The first probably is frustration. And that frustration comes out of a lot of things. I sometimes have kind of a love-hate relationship with one of the gifts that God's given me, and that's fixing things. And you know, the nature of fixing things is that they're broken until they're fixed. Okay? And as long as you're working on it, it's broken. And it continues to be broken until you finally find that last little piece of the puzzle that makes it fixed. So the whole process involves a lot of trial and error, and a lot of error, and a lot of failure. And sometimes it's going to be rather frustrating when you replace this part and you replace this part and you think you've got it all figured out and you buy one more part and you put it in and it still doesn't fix it. You're in the process, Jim, of some automotive repair. I think the automobile is a tool of the devil to anger us. But it can be frustrating. But it doesn't have to make you angry. It can. It can make you angry. How many times have you heard somebody say, I just want to take this thing and throw it up against the wall? Which, of course, doesn't fix it. It only makes matters worse. You have more to fix after that. It's very easy to get frustrated with other people. But what is it really that makes us frustrated with other people? They're not doing what we want them to do. Or they're not doing what we think they ought to do. Why can't they just see if they would just quit doing that? And the more they don't, the more that amygdala kicks in. Because we want to defend our territory, our territory of perceived rightness. And the more that adrenaline kicks in, the less we're thinking rationally, and the less we're willing and able to see the other person's point of view. We just know we're right and they're wrong. And there's no two ways about it. But frustration doesn't have to go that direction. I can be working on something, and sometimes in the process of trying to fix something, Maybe I have a setback. Maybe I break something else in the process because I forgot to do this before I did that. Now understand, I used to be a fairly hot-tempered person. I still to this day have an image of a plate of spaghetti that hit the wall. And that spaghetti sauce oozing down the wall because of my anger. So, not always been a real even-tempered person. And so, I had to work on that. I had to get a lot of help from the Lord to deal with frustration. Things not going the way I thought they ought to go. And, you know, you're playing games with yourself, really. And it's a mindset. It's an attitude. And sometimes it starts with something that may be kind of silly. But if I break something or make something worse or make a mess or whatever, I just tell myself, I wish I hadn't done that. Now I'm going to have to clean up that little mess. You know, and just kind of derail that amygdala. Don't give it the chance to kick in. Another thing that causes anger, I think, is injustice. And this one's harder because frequently, I mean, we can think about things that we think are unjust towards us. But it's harder when we see injustice towards someone we love. Somebody's done something or said something about my child. You mothers have that mama bear instinct, and that can kick in pretty quickly. And you say, well, but that's different because that's righteous indignation. Let's break that down. What's the word indignation mean? It means anger because of injustice. And righteous, of course, means good and correct and proper in the eyes of God. So, what have we done? We've taken the situation and we've given it a name. I'm angry because of injustice. Oh, I have righteous indignation. We've given it a name, and so, see, that makes it okay. But it doesn't change what it is. It's still anger because of injustice. Well, it's not fair. How many times have you heard your children say, that's not fair? My brother got to do it. Why can't I? Oh, I'm sorry, Mac. I didn't mean to look at you when I said that. Oh, it's just not fair. And it makes me mad that it's not fair. Well, life's not fair. that's just part of being alive, and that's just one of the things that you have to learn to deal with. We see a lot of heinous crimes against children. And I'm not in any way making light of that. It's horrible. It's despicable. It's abhorrent. And we want to be angry about that. We want that person who committed that crime against a child, we want that person to suffer. And we want all of those other potential child abusers to see that suffering and know if you do this, you're going to suffer too. And that's real understandable. When Christ was standing on the hill over Jerusalem, and he wept because of the iniquity of the people, he could have gotten angry, and he could have made them all suffer right then and there. He could have made them wish that they'd all been blown to smithereens. But that's not what he did. He wept. Because he had a desire in his heart that those people would change, that their souls would be saved. That needs to be our attitude. That needs to be our desire. Even for the most heinous of criminals. Because it's not all right to execute vengeance. Who gets vengeance? Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. I will repay. You leave it alone. Do what you can to save that soul. Another cause of anger is intolerance. Intolerance of ignorance, rudeness. I think that's where road rage comes out. I'm not going to let him get away with that. Where does that lead? You take somebody's rude action and you turn it into an automobile accident. Okay, what's gained by that? How often do you hear of a guy getting out of his car and approaching a perfect stranger and dragging him out of the car and beating him up or shooting him? What's that all about? He's a perfect stranger. And you're angry with him. That can't be part of your emotional makeup. It just can't be there. Does that mean that there will not be people of whom you're intolerant? No. They're always going to be there. But it's your reaction to it. It's your attitude. It's your willingness to sometimes say, well, there's nothing I can do about that person's attitude, but I can change my own. I cannot let that situation make me angry. So what are the results of anger? Remember, when the amygdala kicks in and it hijacks your brain, you're not capable of rational thought. You're also not capable of hearing that still small voice of God, which is your greatest tool. That's your most powerful tool against anger, is the Spirit of God. We hurt things. Another result of anger. We hurt things. We throw plates of spaghetti. We hurt other people, either physically or emotionally or spiritually. What's the most common reaction to anger? Anger. You get angry with somebody? What are the chances they're going to say, oh, I'm sorry you feel that way. Let's see if we can't work this out. No, usually people get angry when you get angry at them because their amygdala kicks in. Because all of a sudden they're in danger. Somebody's angry at me. I'm in danger. My body says, danger, danger. And then I get angry as a defense mechanism. That natural man kicks in. And 1 Corinthians says, the natural man receiveth not the things of the Spirit of God. When we're in that natural man state, we can't accept the assistance of that Spirit of God to get us back on that right track. Okay. So far I've just been yelling at you. I hope I haven't made you angry. If I sit down now, I haven't done much good. Let's talk about some remedies. How can we deal with it? What can we do? Because it's so pervasive. It's such a strong emotion. It's so easily come upon us. There's got to be some answers. Possibly some of you noticed as I was going through my list of scriptures about anger, the conspicuous absence of Ephesians chapter 4. So let's go there. And let's see what the Word of God says about anger. And we don't want to take this out of context, so I'm going to read a little bit of this chapter. I'm going to begin at verse 17 of Ephesians 4. And understand that, again, we're dealing with a natural man situation. Natural man is an enemy of God. So the solution has got to be a spiritual solution. And that's where so much of pop psychology just falls apart. I mean, we waited and waited and waited through pop psychology just trying to find the physiological causes of anger and the physiological effects, just to find that little bit about the amygdala and the cortisol and all of that. We waded through pages and pages of psychobabble. The solution's got to be spiritual. Ephesians 4, we're going to begin at verse 17. This I say, therefore, and testify in the Lord, that ye henceforth walk not as other Gentiles walk, in the vanity of their mind, having the understanding darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart. He's saying, you used to be an unbeliever. You used to have your heart blinded. You didn't see the true righteousness of God and the power of His Spirit. He said, but you're not that way anymore. So let's turn from that. Verse 20. Verse 19. Having the understanding, I read that, being darkened, being alienated from the life of God through the ignorance that is in them because of the blindness of their heart. If our heart is blinded, then we're susceptible to this frustration and injustice and intolerance. And really, think about it. What is the root of intolerance and frustration and perceived injustice? Things are not going my way. I'm not getting what I want. They're not doing it the way I think they ought to do it. This is all pride. It's amazing to me how often the root of a problem is pride. Verse 20. But ye have not so learned Christ, if so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus. I didn't read that right. If so be that ye have heard him and have been taught by him as the truth is in Jesus, then put ye off concerning the former conversation, the old man. Take that angry person that you used to be, that person that was filled with anger and hatred. And take that person and those attitudes that person carried and put them away. Get rid of it. Put off concerning the former conversation the old man, which is corrupt according to the deceitful lusts, and be renewed in the spirit of your mind. Let God's Spirit overtake that spirit of man, of humanity, that spirit of the natural man. and that ye put on the new man, which after God is created in righteousness and true holiness. Be that righteous and holy person that God wants you to be. God's got a two-step program for anger. And he lays it out here. And if we don't recognize it as such, then the rest of the verses of this chapter become just a little bit confusing. So he's laying out a roadmap for us. Two steps. Let's look at the first step. And this is one of the most misunderstood verses in the entire Bible. Be ye angry and sin not. I read commentary after commentary, Christian commentary, that says this verse means it's okay to be angry as long as you don't sin. You can just be absolutely ragingly furious as long as you don't sin. I'm sorry, I can't buy that. Because there isn't anything else that we've read up till now that indicates that that's okay. So, let's look at it now as a two-step program. We don't need 12, we only need two. Two-step program is, if you get angry, don't sin. When you feel that rush of adrenaline coming along, says danger, danger, protect yourself. You've got to recognize that. You've got to say, Lord, help me put this away. There's a neat thing that happens in your body. There are two centers of your brain that are stimulated at the same time, the amygdala and the cortex. The cortex is that part of your brain that does rational thought. And if that cortex is prepared and a situation comes along and it recognizes that situation as not dangerous, guess what it does? It shuts down the amygdala. If the amygdala kicks in first, shuts down the cortex. So it's possible to shut down the anger. It's physiologically possible to shut down the anger. So step one is don't allow that to take over and blossom into full rage. Start controlling that anger. Let not the sun go down on your wrath. It's an interesting thing about this physiological anger thing. And that is that those chemicals stay in your body for hours, maybe even days. And as long as they're in there and they're churning around, you're a whole lot more susceptible to getting angry again. Because you're already, you know, that amygdala, it's sitting there, he's working, he's ready to go at a moment's notice. So don't let the sun go down on your anger. Don't hold a grudge. Don't hold on to it. We like to do that. There's something about anger that makes us feel a little bit better about ourselves because it's directed towards somebody else and their incorrectness. They're wrong and I'm right. That makes me feel good. And so we like to hold on to that. But that's pride. Step 2, verse 31. I want you to listen real closely to verse 31. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. It doesn't say deal with it. It doesn't say use it to good advantage. It says, get it out of your life. Gone. Is it easy? No. Is it ever totally complete? I don't think so. But that's the goal. Christ had a goal. Did he say, be ye therefore pretty good, or be ye therefore kind of marvelous? Christ said, be ye therefore perfect. That's the only goal that he can set for us, is that goal of perfection. And this is part of that goal of perfection, that we not allow anger to exist in our lives. That's the goal. And that remedy, it's almost too easy. It sounds too good to be true. Verse 32. Be ye kind one to another. Be ye kind one to another. It sounds too easy. We want to make things more complex, more interesting, more yes, but. The rod of iron, God's word, is really pretty straightforward. Be ye kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another. What you said, it was really kind of frustrating to me that you said that. But I'm going to forgive you that. And maybe I'm going to try to understand what you meant when you said it. I'm going to try to understand your emotions at the time. But I'm not going to hold a grudge against you. Forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. Do we want God to hold a grudge against us? Do we want to have to deal with the wrath of God like we read about in the beginning? I don't think so. He told us, if you can't forgive your fellow man, I can't forgive you. It's all pretty simple. So when you're faced with frustration, try patience. Try understanding. Try humility. Try to recognize your own limitations. There are some things I just can't fix. I'm just going to have to let them go. I'm just going to have to turn it over to God and say, God, you're going to have to take care of the child molester, because that's beyond my ability to deal with that. That injustice. Turn it over to God. Don't expect everything to always go your way, because it's not going to happen. Don't fall into the trap of righteous indignation. Recognize when you're in a situation where that emergency center of your brain is about to kick in. Be aware of what's going on around you. Rather than just saying, well, there she goes again. She's about to say this, and every time she says that, I get mad. Well, if you know that, deal with it. Be aware. Change your attitude. Change your response. Try to be a little more tender-hearted and kind and forgiving. Romans 12. I usually get back to Romans 12 before it's all over. Verses 17 through 21. Recompense no man evil for evil. Don't fight sticks with sticks and stones with stones. Provide things honest in the sight of all men. If it be possible, as much as lieth in you, live peaceably with all men. If your desire is to have a peaceful relationship with somebody, then that relationship can't include anger. You have to have that mindset, that attitude, that I'm just not going to be that way. Dearly beloved, avenge not yourselves. Vengeance, we don't get vengeance, but rather give place unto wrath. Put anger in its place. For it is written, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Therefore, if thine enemy hunger, feed him. If he thirst, give him drink. For in so doing, thou shalt heap coals of fire upon his head. And what are those coals of fire? We want to twist this a little bit and make it sound like, oh, I'm going to make him squirm a little bit. Well, that's just vengeance all over again, just a little less. Think about those coals of fires being Christ's love. I'm going to heap Christ's love on his head. Be not overcome of evil. Don't let the anger overcome you. Be not overcome of evil, but overcome evil with good. Give it to God. I thank you for your time. God bless you each.